Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it. Believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of the ultimate Florida man to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is circular reasoning, also known as circulus in demonstrando.
Yeah, so circular reasoning is, we've discussed before, begging the question.
Yeah.
Which is a form of circular reasoning.
Right.
So this is more kind of the it's not a blanket fallacy by any means, but it takes in more examples. I'm actually wearing a T-shirt right now that says circular reasoning works because, and it's written in a circle. Circular reasoning works because
circular reasoning works. Yeah.
So actually, ironically, I think that's an example of begging the question, really.
Yeah.
As I say, that is a form of circular reasoning. So what we're discussing this time is ones that don't really fit into begging the question.
Right.
Which is because they usually have two claims that people are making, really. And each claim supports the other one. At least two, that is.
Yeah.
So A because of B and B because of A. So, the classic example is like God exists because it says so in the Bible. And we know the Bible's true because it's the word of God.
Right. Right.
So both of those support each other and you can keep going around in circles.
Yeah.
So our Trump example, there's a little bit of Trump in it, but it's mostly just Republicans in general because it's about his first impeachment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And why they didn't want to have witnesses in the Senate trial.
Oh, yeah.
They did have witnesses for the House, although they subpoenaed several witnesses who just basically refused to show up, including John Bolton and Mick Mulvaney and others. But their arguments for not having witnesses in the Senate were usually quite circular. And there were several of them, in fact. In the House, Kevin McCarthy said this.
The Democrats' case is based on secondhand opinions and hearsay. Simply put, there are no grounds for impeachment.
So their argument was that because all of the witnesses that they'd heard from in the House section of the impeachment were kind of second-hand witnesses, there was no one who was actually on the call with Ukraine.
Right.
Therefore, none of it was direct knowledge. They hadn't heard from any witnesses who knew anything about it, really.
Yeah.
So therefore, there weren't any grounds for impeachment.
Kind of glossed over the fact that they just didn't put those witnesses up.
Yeah, they hadn't. Yeah. They asked those witnesses, including Mulvaney, and in fact, there were four that they'd asked who did have direct knowledge of the call, but they refused to testify, basically because Trump had told them not to.
Because they got first-hand knowledge of what went on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that became one of the reasons in the Senate trial why they claimed they didn't want witnesses was because there was no point calling these extra witnesses who hadn't testified in the House section because there was no new information presented in the Senate trial. You know, everything that was presented in the Senate trial they'd heard before.
Right.
But that's because the Republicans voted 9 times not to have any new information.
But that's also an accelerated truth, isn't it? Kind of wrapped in there as well, because they kind of said, it's we're not going to have any new witnesses or new information, and because there's no new information,
there's nothing for new witnesses to corroborate.
Because it's a fact. Suddenly it's a fact that there's no new information because they've suppressed any chance of any new information appearing. Yeah. Accelerated circulating reason.
Yeah, it was a bizarre thing. And in fact, John Cornyn, Texas Senator John Cornyn, said to the reporters outside the Senate chamber after one of the days, he said, what we ought to be presented with is evidence by witnesses that have personal knowledge.
Yeah.
And Chuck Schumer in the background said, yeah, absolutely, I agree. but Cornyn was one of the ones voting against hearing from witnesses. So their arguments essentially were, we won't hear from these witnesses because there's no new evidence to corroborate for them to tell us about. And because we don't have any new evidence, then there's no grounds for this impeachment, essentially.
Right, yeah. What? Jesus Christ. And it worked.
It worked in as much as because the Republicans were in charge, they didn't really need an excuse not to vote for witnesses. But Trump did something similar. He tweeted, I would love to have Mike Pompeo, Rick Perry, Mick Mulvaney and many others testify about the phony impeachment hoax. It is a Democrat scam that is going nowhere, but future presidents should in no way be compromised. What has happened to me should never happen to another president. So his argument, or one of his arguments as to why he couldn't possibly have these people testify, was because of executive privilege.
Right.
Which again, is he was basically saying, I can't have them testify because they'll tell you about stuff that's supposed to be secret. Because executive privilege is just stuff that I did that the people around me know about.
And nobody else need know about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'd love to have them testify. And at the same time, he was saying this is a hoax. And the way to prove it's a hoax would be to have these people testify because they know everything about it.
Yep.
But I can't have them testify because this shouldn't happen to another president because it's a scam, because it's a hoax.
So it's a hoax because they're not able to testify. No, it's a hoax.
I would be able to prove it to if I let them testify,
but I can't
let them testify because it's a hoax.
Because it's a hoax, and it ought not to happen to anybody else because it's a hoax.
Yeah,
that's just weird, isn't it? What? And, and did anybody at the time see through it apart from us?
Oh yeah, I think everybody did.
Right,
because again. It was completely up to the Republicans in the Senate whether they had witnesses or not, and we knew they were not going to allow
them. No, because we knew that if they did, they would corroborate the evidence that we knew had happened, that was factual. Well,
I mean, Mick Mulvaney said in a press conference, not under oath, he said he didn't actually say, yes, there was a quid pro quo, but he said, you know, was it political? Yes, of course it was. This is politics. Get used to it. This is how we do things.
Yes, exactly.
And of course, John Bolton put it in his book and specifically said, and extracts were released during the trial and before the trial, saying, Trump specifically tied aid for Ukraine to Ukraine investigating Hunter Biden.
Yeah.
But he also didn't testify. So.
Yeah.
So our second Republican example, at least, is Governor Scott Walker, who was asked about, or he was arguing against the legalization of marijuana. And his main argument was that it is not socially acceptable to smoke marijuana. His evidence for that was, if I'm at a wedding reception here and somebody has a drink or two, most people wouldn't say they're wasted. Most folks with marijuana wouldn't be sitting around a wedding reception smoking marijuana. So he's saying that because you wouldn't smoke marijuana in public, whereas you would have a drink, therefore it shouldn't be made legal.
Yeah, because we've made it illegal so that people don't sit around smoking it in public. Therefore, we shouldn't make it legal because people don't sit around smoking in public.
Yeah.
What? Well, when I first read that as Scott Walker, I thought, Scott Walker of the Walker Brothers? No. That's a very... I'm sure being a musician in the 60s, you'd be a bit more lax about the marijuana. It's a bit straight-laced. Yeah. That's kind of crazy, isn't it? That's kind of...
It's very similar to the "this person is a criminal." How do you know he's a criminal? Well, I arrested him.
He's under arrest, sir. He's in the cells now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Now, it's quite interesting, this, because there was something came up only last Monday, the 13th. Well, in the UK, in the timeline of our lockdown, we've been locked down since January. God, it feels like forever.
I mean, that's the most recent lockdown.
The most recent one. Lockdown 3. Yeah. There was a little bit of relief insofar as we were allowed to go to the pub. So pubs and restaurants were allowed to serve people in groups, albeit, a limited number of people from a limited number of households could meet together in a pub garden and have a beer. And this was kind of lauded as a great thing that they've done, obviously in response to a lot of lobbying from the brewery Tory supporters. They said Trump supporters. And when I first heard this, I thought there's something in here that might be a circular, something bugging me tremendously about this. So after the relaxing of the lockdown, the very next day, Boris said this.
Everybody's been able yesterday to go to the pub. Those people be going to the pub to go shopping, get a haircut, and so on. And that's great. And the numbers are down of infections and hospitalizations and deaths. But it is very, very important for everybody to understand that the reduction in these numbers has not been achieved by the vaccination program. People don't, I think, appreciate that it's the lockdown that has been overwhelmingly important in delivering this improvement. So, as we unlock, the result will inevitably be that we will see more infection. Sadly, we will see more hospitalisation and deaths. And people have just got to understand that. At the moment, I can't see any reason for us to change the roadmap, to deviate from the May the 17th, June the 21st, the next waymarks on the roadmap. But it is very, very important that if we're to get there in the way that we all want, that people continue to be cautious.
So it's a bit long, but we'll get there. So the roadmap he refers to is May the 17th, is that most of the outdoor mixing rules will be lifted and we'll be back to the rule of six indoors, up to 30 people can attend gatherings outdoors. In June, he talked about all social distancing measures will be removed and we'll be able to go up to perfect strangers and hug them. And lick them. Yes, exactly. You won't even have to ask them to prove that they've had infection.
When you're a star, they let you do it.
They let you do it. Yeah. So those are the bits of the roadmap. And there's a couple of other things that strike me along the way in there, which will lead us to the circularity, which I think is he's very careful in not falling into, is my point. So he says people have been able to go to the pub and shopping and stuff, and that's great. In a kind of tone that says, well, it's all well and good you doing that, but you've got to be careful. And you think, well, hang on a minute, you said we could. So, yeah. And then he also says people don't appreciate that it's the lockdown. Well, no, we don't, because your previous bolsterous statements have been lauding the vaccination program to the skies as the panacea for the return to normality. Various people on Twitter have kind of mentioned this, and they've said, he's never wanted to equate lockdowns heretofore. He's never wanted to equate lockdowns with success and never not wanted to claim success for the vaccine. But here's the circular argument, which I think is elephanting in the room like a whirling dervish. When he says, for the moment, I can't see any reason to change the roadmap, notwithstanding the fact that he's just said all the reasons that they should change the roadmap, because he said there will be infections, hospitalizations, and deaths. He's saying this is going to happen. We come out of lockdown, people are going to die. But I can't see any reason. And that's where we can. We can all see it. If only lockdown has brought infections, hospitalizations, and death under control, then coming out will bring it back up, surely. If the vaccination scheme or the other track and trace and border control mechanisms that you put in place during the 3 months that the lockdown brought you aren't the things that did it, then why did you do them? Well, you see, they didn't, except for the vaccination. So I think you can hear him spotting in all that umming and erring. There's like 4 seconds of it. He can spot the circular reasoning about to happen. And then, like Arthur Dent in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, plummeting towards the ground, veers off at the last minute and achieves flight. So there's a kind of pure fantasy from Douglas Adams, but this flight of fantasy from Boris is rock solid government policy.
So can I just clarify? You've brought this as an example.
Yeah.
Of a circular reasoning that didn't happen.
Didn't happen.
On the basis,
we could all see it happening.
On the basis that Boris was going to do it, but saw the circular reasoning and therefore didn't do it. So it's an example of a thing that didn't happen because it was going to happen and then didn't happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Meta.
It's a meta example because it's very difficult to find, because they are... It's also an illustration of why it's difficult to find examples for the UK government, because they're very clever or they're very mindful of not falling into these traps. So what I wanted to show was him being mindful of not falling into the trap, which he's blatantly there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The fact that he's saying it wasn't the vaccines.
It was the lockdown.
And now that we've got the vaccines and no lockdown, which is what I'm replacing essentially lockdown with, because the whole point of the lockdown ending on this roadmap was that by this point there would be a certain number of people vaccinated.
Yes, exactly.
Which they have achieved.
Yep.
And so to now say, the vaccines are basically not important. It was all about the lockdown.
It was all about the lockdown. And then you go, let's keep going. Let's unlock. You know, never mind your vaccine. Never mind. So everybody's going, well, wait, I'm waiting for my second one now. Should I go ahead with that? Or does it make no difference? Or have we all been vaccinated for no reason at all? Because actually what's about to happen, we're not immune. It was a waste of time. We've got to go around again. But it's,
although there is plenty, there isn't as much vaccine hesitancy here as there is in the US. Mm. There is, unfortunately, still... There are still idiots in the UK.
Yeah.
But
but
it's, whereas saying something like this would probably inspire a great, you know, an upsurge in vaccine hesitancy.
Yeah.
And it may do slightly here, but it's probably not as big a deal.
Well, it's not done it any favours.
No.
You know, at one point he was all saying, go get your vaccine done, you know, don't listen to all this mis and disinformation. And it's not, you know, there's something there. It's kind of, it's the usual blame shifting, which says, you know, it's the numbers are all going to go up. We've said you can go, we're going to unlock lockdown and you're free to do all the things we said you couldn't do. But if you go and do them and people die, then it's not our fault. It's yours. Ultimately. Yeah. You know, so my circularity ever is because you're a Tory and you don't care about the people you serve dying because you won't take any responsibility and be personally accountable for the welfare of the public that you serve because you're a Tory. There's my circular argument. And that's kind of that in a nutshell is the circle that's been going on with the lockdowns when we talked about, you know, when you kind of went, okay, so when do you predict we'll all go back into lockdown or the roadmap wouldn't happen, is that the Tories go into lockdown too late and people have died. Then they are persuaded to come out of lockdown early by lobbyists who've got vested interests in, you know, economic things, and they are Tory donors. I'm thinking of Weatherspoons, the guy that runs Weatherspoons, for instance.
Yeah.
Great lobbyists for reopening the pubs. So the Tories will reopen too early. then lots of people die, and then they all lock down too late, because of pressure from Tory lobbyists. So we'll just go round and round and round. So in a slightly cheerier note, maybe? I'm not sure about that. No, I think it is. So my second example is from 2018, from a woman who was fleeing Iran, fearing execution because she's a follower of the Christian faith, and Iran isn't, and so was seeking asylum in the UK, and her asylum claim was rejected because the Home Office considered her belief in Jesus to be half-hearted. And this is her refusal letter said, "You affirmed in your asylum interview record that Jesus is your saviour, but then claimed he wouldn't be able to save you from the Iranian regime. It's therefore considered that you have no conviction in your faith and your belief in Jesus is half-hearted."
Fucking hell.
So, yeah. So the circularity is, you know, you're a Christian seeking asylum because you're being persecuted with threat of execution from Iran. But Christ is your saviour, but he won't save you from the Iranian regime. So therefore, you're not really a Christian.
Where is your God now?
Yeah, exactly.
What? Fucking hell. That's amazing.
So I think the lawyers pointed out not just the circularity and the reasoning, but you know, the kind of maybe something to do with human rights, that kind of being slightly transgressed. So, when you're up against that kind of stuff, it does, you kind of think, actually, yeah, Brexit's not all that bad, really, is it?
Don't feel that you're done, world. You can surely find one world. Find a wild fallacy, a fallacy in the wild. Don't feel that you're done, world. You can surely find one world. Find a wild fallacy, a fallacy in the wild.
There we go. The Osmonds there with their 1970s circular hit. Love me for a reason. Let the reason be love.
You know, sometimes, very occasionally, I don't recognise the songs that you use for the Fallacy in the Wild things.
Yeah.
Usually I do, because they're usually quite well known. But I'm embarrassed to say I knew that one. So.
Did you know the Boyzone version or the Osmonds version?
I'm afraid I did. Yeah, I knew the Boyzone one. I mean, I was aware it was an Osmonds song. But the one I knew.
Yeah.
I actually had the Boyzone album that it was on.
Fantastic. So. Well, I have got the Osmonds album live version that it's on. So from 20 years prior to that. So, yeah. So, but it's about time it got covered again, really. Yeah.
In my defense, I did get that Boyzone CD in one of those like five CDs for a penny thing that you got occasionally in a magazine.
Right.
You know, when you join this CD a month club and then cancel. Yeah. So.
Wow.
It wasn't. I didn't spend like proper money on it, but
oh, okay. Oh, and yet you knew that it was one of the bundle.
There was a big like it list was of the, things
it
you
was
could choose
particular,
from.
Right.
That was one of the ones
you
I chose.
Chose it.
The thing is, the ones you could choose from because they were giving them away for five for a penny.
Yeah.
They were usually pretty shit ones, but you know, five CDs for a penny. It's all right.
Can't go wrong, can you? Well, no, you can.
Yeah.
You could literally go wrong five times. Yeah.
Anyway, in the Fallacy in the World, we like to talk about the Fallacy of the Week from a non-political perspective, and our first example is a fairly classic one, really, for this fallacy. It's Catch 22. Mark informs me they have done a TV show of this recently on Hulu, but this is from the film version.
Is Locke crazy?
Of course he is. He has to be crazy to keep flying after all the close calls he's had.
Then why can't you ground him?
I can, but first he has to ask me.
That's all he's got to do to be grounded?
That's all.
And then you can ground him?
No, then I cannot ground him. There's a catch.
A catch?
Sure, Catch 22. Anyone who wants to get out of combat isn't really crazy, so I can't ground him.
Okay, let me see if I got this straight. In order to be grounded, I've got to be crazy. and I must be crazy to keep flying. But if I ask to be grounded, that means I'm not crazy anymore and I have to keep flying.
You've got it. That's catch 22. Woo! That's some catch, I catch 22.
It's the best there is. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so the Doctor can't ground combat pilots because of insanity. Because if they ask to be grounded, they're clearly sane.
Yeah. And if they're sane, then they've got to keep flying.
Yeah.
And if they can't, they can only.
And if they're crazy, they don't ask to be grounded.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Because they got to go. He's crazy. Why is he crazy? Because he's not. Well, he's flying and he hasn't asked me to fly. So if he asks, then he's clearly not crazy. So he has to keep flying.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Because you'd be crazy to keep flying. But if you. Yeah, but then if you ask not to fly any more missions, then you're clearly quite sane. And if you're sane, you can fly more missions. That's
some catch, catch
22. Yeah, yeah.
Our second example comes from the fantastic film Idiocracy.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the cabinet meeting where Joe is trying to figure out how to get the crops to grow again and realises that they're being watered with an energy drink called Brondo, which has electrolytes.
You want to solve this problem? I want to get my pardon, so why don't we just try it, okay? And not worry about what plants crave.
Brondo's got what plants crave.
Yeah, it's got electrolytes.
What are electrolytes? Do you even know?
It's what they use to make Brondo.
Yeah, but why do they use them to make Brondo?
Because Brondo's got electrolytes.
After several hours, Joe finally gave up on logic and reason and simply told the cabinet that he could talk to plants and that they wanted water.
And so, then the benefit is that because they've been putting so much Brondo in the ground, there's all those salts and electrolytes which act as a fertilizer. So
Brondo is what plants crave because it's got electrolytes, and it's got electrolytes because that's what plants crave.
Yeah, or no, that's what. Why has it got electrolytes in it?
Well, because Brondo's got electrolytes.
Brondo's got electrolytes, yeah. That's why it's in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, love that he just gives
logic
up.
There.
No. which he realizes and then just gives up and says, yeah, I can talk to plants and this is what they're telling me. Yeah. And they go, oh, okay. Yeah. And of course, as we know, that's not a drama or a comedy. It's actually a documentary.
It is. Sadly.
Future proves past. And if you could recognize, I've recognized Kushner in the cabinet with his great big medallion.
We've got a few examples in this section this week. Our next one comes from the sitcom Superstore. This is from the Olympics special episode, which was between seasons one and two, went out during the Olympics. And Glenn, the store manager, is trying to get everyone excited about being from the USA, essentially, and being on Team USA.
I just thought that during the Olympics, it'd be fun to pretend that we're all American. Even you, Sandra.
I'm from Hawaii.
Not today, you're not.
I do love America, but the Philippines is also great.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. It's just that, technically, America's number one.
Well, Glenn, what do you mean, technically?
Just as a fact. That's the saying. America's number one.
Well, but other countries believe that they're number one.
But America is number one. Because it's first in the world.
That's an airtight argument, though.
First in the world in what?
Being the best.
At?
Being number one of countries and planets.
So, yeah.
America's number one.
Because it's the best at being
best
number
at
one.
Being number one, yeah, of countries.
And planets.
Planets. It does sound like Grover from Sesame Street explaining it. Circular reference. Number one over here. Brilliant. Because when we were looking at this, and there are like a million examples, you think, well, actually, it's the staple of comedy or frustrating drama is Kafkaesque, isn't it? You get caught up in these loops where you can't do something because computer says no.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's that. That's why it's a rich fertilizer, electrolytes, for comedic frustration.
And I think some of that comes from the fact that the person who is using this, and this is why it's actually quite a difficult fallacy to contend with, is the person who is saying it is usually completely convinced by both of the sides, both the parts of the argument. And since both the parts support each other, the fact they're already, it's a kind of circular in that way, the fact they're already convinced by those parts means they have convincing proof of the thing they believe.
Yeah. and actually, that's why it both contains the frustration that Yossarian experiences, in full knowledge with the doc, that they can't do it because this thing exists, because computer says no. You know, that's, and they're just observing it from the outside. And the reason that the comedy examples are comedic is because we're observing it from the outside, and you're seeing how convinced these people are of both sides of the argument and their own proof of their own argument, which comes from the other, from each of the sides. You know, not only have they got one proof, they've got two.
Yeah,
because the other one shores up the first one,
more and
which
more
shores
true.
Up the second one.
So our fourth example comes from the Terry Jones film, Eric the Viking.
Oh, yeah.
This is right at the beginning of the film when Tim Robbins, the titular Eric, is questioned about the logic of continually looting and pillaging.
Why have you got to go around killing and looting all the time?
To pay for the next expedition, of course.
But that's a circular argument. If the only reason for the expedition is the killing and looting, and the only reason for the killing and looting is to pay for the next expedition, they cancel each other out.
Yeah, fair point.
There you go. Yeah, it's got, what's lovely about it is it feels like an extended bit of the To Turn Me Into a Newt. It could easily be in Holy Grail or Jabberwocky or something like that, couldn't it?
Yeah. So absolutely, if you need to go on another expedition, then you need to get some money. And you do that by looting and pillaging.
Looting and pillaging,
And, of course, you need to go on another expedition, because otherwise how are you going to do some looting and pillaging?
Yeah, because how are you going to pay for the one after that?
Yeah.
Don't be daft. Yeah. So our final example is, this is a name that's come up. If you've not watched it, you should go watch it. Felicia Trump playing No More Jockeys.
It's on our YouTube channel,
On our YouTube channel. It often appears in the game playing, normally followed by no more people with Z's in their name, at the footballer Zinedine Zidane. In 2006, he was sent off during the France versus Italy World Cup final because he headbutted Marco Materazzi, who allegedly insulted him, or, you know, probably in an Italian kind of way, said something questionable about his mother or something like that. And we don't quite know what the thing was. I mean, he was sent off. His career was in ruins and it was over for this headbutt, which was kind of completely off the ball. It was something going on. And when you watch the coverage of it, it's not even on camera. They have to go find another camera because something's happened. I mean, if there's such a thing as an innocuous headbutt,
Headbutts him in the chest.
It doesn't break his nose in a Guy Ritchie kind of movie kind of way. Mm. So when I was watching it, I was thinking, oh yeah, there's that headbutt thing. And so I went to look at it and you go, oh, well, that's not much of a headbutt. That's because I've been brought up on Guy Ritchie movies with Vinnie Jones.
It's not as bad as Cantona's flying kick, is it?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, quite. But it's, you know, of that thing. Back, it was in more innocent days when people were just going, what the hell are you doing? Get off my field and never work again. So, and the reasoning, the supporters' reasoning for Zidane was that the Italian guy's jibe must have been so unforgivable for Zidane to have thrown everything away, because that was it. It was the end of his career. So, and therefore his actions were justified. So it must have been really bad for him to have done that, knowing that it would cause the end of his career. So what Materazzi must have said must have been really bad and therefore justified the actions that he did. And somehow it makes it heroic. So it kind of, it in a circular way, it bolsters the reason he did it.
So the two claims are, essentially, the headbutt can't have been unjustified because Matarazzi said something really bad, and we know he said something really bad, because otherwise the headbutt would be unjustified.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise you wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
So it's a proper conspiracy theorist support. It's for people that, rather than just being outraged at his actions, are going, the fuck are you doing? Nothing justifies that kind of behaviour, which is what the referee's stance was. And to be fair, the French coach, and the FA, but they were trying to go, well, you know, that's nothing justifies that kind of behaviour. All of the supporters of Zinedine Zidane said, well, yeah, of course it's justified. He was an Italian and he insulted him in an Italian way, you know.
In a way strong enough to make someone headbutt you.
So absolutely. It must have been awful. So quite right that he should have got headbutted. Yeah.
So before we move on to fake news this week, there's time for a quick update on our competition that we're running with our friends at TeePublic, because we're actually extending the deadline.
Yep.
And the reason for that is there's been a bit of a technical glitch at TeePublic. They're having some trouble with their search engine. At the moment, we don't actually know if anyone's entered the competition or not yet.
Oh, right, because we can't do a search.
Because we can't access those T-shirts. So if you haven't entered yet, there's still time. You've got until now the end of April. If you have an idea for a T-shirt, whether it's a slogan or a design or anything that is anything to do with Trump or logic or our show or critical thinking just in general, anything you think we might find amusing or interesting, go to fallacioustrump.com/competition for all the information there. You've still got time to do that. There'll be a vote and the best T-shirt will win some stuff. Yeah. And if you have already done it, then please send me at jim@fallacioustrump.com a link to your design, which you've uploaded to TeePublic, because then I can pass that on to TeePublic and they can get everything all sorted out in behind the scenes. So sorry that hasn't happened yet. We only just found out that basically they haven't quite, something went wrong basically in the search engine.
So we can't
access them. And it's possible. We haven't had any entries and we just don't know yet. But we don't know. Hopefully you've had the odd one. Yeah. But at the moment, it's looking good for you if you enter.
Get in there.
So we'll see.
I won a T-shirt design competition with a motorbike-based one. And my entry was, Dad, can I have a motorbike when I grow up? Nah, sorry, son, you can't do both. That was my T-shirt design, and I won a whole bunch of T-shirts.
Cool.
Well,
you could win a whole bunch of T-shirts, or at least a couple of T-shirts and some other stuff, if you enter this competition.
The only drawback on my one was with the sales of my one, and I can see that it's actually sold my design, I get no commission. Whereas, unlike our competition.
If you enter, even if you don't win, if people want to buy your T-shirt, you will get money for that. So
win-win.
There you go. So fallacioustrump.com/competition.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for fake news, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
See, the only reason I haven't been winning is so far because it's rigged. And the reason it's rigged in favour of the House is because that's how to suppress my winning.
Fair enough. Yeah, can't argue with that logic. So,
no.
Yeah, it's airtight.
It is. Every time I say it, I believe it even more.
So I've got something a little bit different this time.
Oh, yeah? Right.
Because what I've done is gone all the way back to the 90s.
Right.
Trump, in the 90s particularly, and I think at other times as well, but specifically in the 90s, had a bit of a thing where he would pretend that he wasn't him.
Right.
And say nice things about himself to journalists.
Yeah.
So he had various pseudonyms that he would use to talk to journalists or to write things. But it was obviously him.
Right. Yeah.
And so these are some of the comments that he said about himself. And one of the things that he very commonly talked about himself was how much success he had with women.
Yeah.
So these are three examples of that phenomenon.
So they're all obviously fake because he had no success in terms of women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So number one.
Right.
This was supposedly by John Miller, not Donald
John
Trump.
John Miller, right.
John Miller. Yeah. That was his name that he used. And it was an interview with People magazine in 1991.
Right.
He treated his wife well, and he will treat Marla well. He's somebody that has a lot of options, and frankly, he gets called by everybody. He gets called by everybody in the book in terms of women.
That's... And how could, having listened to Trump's cadence, how the people kind of went, wait a minute, he's gone and he will treat. Uh-huh. He said, well, that's Donald Trump, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Statement number two, this was supposedly John Barron.
And that's where he got Barron for his son from, right? Yeah.
And this was Time magazine in 1994. It's true, women are just drawn to Donald. It's really like they can't... I've never seen anything like it, frankly, and they flirt with him all the time, whether they mean to or not. They just can't help themselves.
Right. I've never seen anything like it, frankly. People have told me. Yeah. Whether they mean to or not. Well, listen, I think the whole thing about flirting is it's a deliberate act, isn't it?
You would think, yeah.
Are you flirty with me? Yeah.
And statement number three, this was a letter to New York magazine that was supposedly written by Carolyn Gallego, who claimed that she had been Donald Trump's secretary for years. Mm-hmm. It said, I do not believe any man in America gets more calls from women wanting to see him, meet him, or go out with him. The most beautiful women, the most successful women, all women love Donald Trump.
Yep. A desperate man, isn't he? Yeah. Okay. Well, they've all got the little bit in there, the this, the that. Then he kind of corrects himself. Like, it's really like they can't, it kind of gets the end of a sentence and then thinks of something else. Okay, which kind of convinced me of number two, but then I thought, but Jim would have noticed that and he would have invented that. So I, okay. Get some more calls. Okay. Right, I'm going to go for it. Despite that, and on the basis of that, I think number two is the one that you made up.
Despite that and on the basis of that.
Yeah, there's my circular reasoning. Okay. Yeah, despite that and because of that. Yeah.
So of the other two, which are you more convinced by?
I'm more convinced by number one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, number one is real.
Ooh.
And there was an audio recording of this interview I did with people. It's pretty crappy because it was recorded kind of cassette. Like over a phone, but here it is.
He treated his wife well and he won't treat mama well. And, you know, he's somebody that has a lot of options. And frankly, he gets called by everybody. He gets called by everybody in the book in terms of women.
That's just so Trump,
obviously Trump.
So obviously Trump. Because he just that. And he treated, and he will treat Marla. He's like, treated her, he won't anymore. And then, he gets in terms of women. That's just such a Trumpist thing to say, isn't it?
At one point in the interview, he claimed, I'm fairly new here. This John Miller guy.
Right, yeah. He's the kind of guy, I'm ringing up on behalf of Donald Trump. This is Donald Trump's mom. Donald won't be in school today because he's not feeling very well. But I'll be back. He'll be back in tomorrow.
So you also think the number three is real?
I think number three is real.
And number three,
I have my doubts. Yeah,
is real.
Oh,
this was a letter to New York magazine, so I don't have an audio clip for this.
Yeah.
But so I will put a link to the article or the letter in the show notes. Wow. To prove that. But
that's so crap, isn't it? That he just like wrote in, wrote in as his own secretary in order to just basically beg people to go out with him. You know, to, because his in his kind of warped sense of what makes men attractive, makes him attractive, is that other women will be fighting to get to the front of the queue as soon as they read that women are queuing.
So this was in a period where he was being accused of being misogynistic. Unbelievable. But it happened.
No, I can't believe that. What was that?
And and so, he claimed as his own non-existent secretary that they were unable to track down a person called Carolyn Gallego who had ever been connected with Trump at all.
Yeah.
That he not only had the greatest respect for women, but also all the women wanted to go out with him. All the most
No man in America gets more calls. This in a world where Robert Redford exists, you know, and Warren Beatty exist, and, you know, a young, Harrison Ford would have been around then.
Oh, I mean, just, you know, like, so on a list.
Any other man in America, I believe any other man in America gets more calls from women wanting to see him.
Yeah.
Why would they want
on a list of America's sexiest bachelors or whatever? Yeah. He would not be on the list.
No. That's our circular reason. Yeah. Yeah. If you were compiling a list, of sexy American men in the 90s that people would want to go out with, brackets who have comb over haircuts. Yeah. He would be the only one on the list. No, he wouldn't. Well, he'd be on the list of it'd be like a Venn diagram of men with comb-over haircuts and men who women want to go. Even then, they wouldn't overlap. They'd be on two different pages. They'd be a long way apart from each other. My God. It's just been running this whole shtick for so many years. It's all absolute bollocks, isn't it?
It really is.
God.
Yeah.
So that when we saw Dead Men Can't Do It. Ghosts Can't Do It. Dead Men Can't Do It. Dead Men Don't Jump. Ghosts Can't Do It. He was playing himself. He was you know, and thinking that he was Bo Derek's, you know, dream man.
I reckon he convinced himself that he was her love interest in the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was the romantic lead. In that scene, he probably filmed lots of other scenes as well, and sent them to the director John Derek.
Yeah,
and expected to be.
He filmed lots of stuff on his own, just kind of with in a mirror exactly, and kind of going
making the weird fucking quissy face. Pursed lip thing that's just terrifying.
Just cut that in with no, it'll be fine. Yeah, that'll be fine. No,
yeah.
I mean, it's a terrible movie. Don't go there. But you can listen to our review
on our Patreon channel. Yeah, patreon.com/ftrump.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you're correct that is fake. John Barron was a name that he used continuously,
right.
And admitted in court when questioned that John Barron was a name he had occasionally used.
No. When questioned about what? About whether he lied to the press.
Basically, it was something, I forget which of the court cases that he was involved in that it came up in. It may have been when he was sanctioned for not renting his apartments to black people. It may have been when he was in court trying to stop Native Americans from getting casinos because he said, you can't really tell if they're Native Americans. They don't look very Native American. Or, actually, I think he said, they don't look like Indians to me. Or it could have been one of the many other court cases that he was involved in.
In that era.
Yeah.
Wow. So he did have to admit that he had used John Barron.
Yes.
Right.
But that one wasn't one of the quotes that was attributed to John Barron.
Wow.
So that means that you're on a roll. I think this is like three in a row.
Fantastic.
Since your break, you've come back refreshed and you're at 100% there.
Well, secretly I've read absolutely everything
he's ever said. Yeah, that's really what you were doing, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. That was my secret.
That's why you were off for 3 months. It was just
He kept writing new stuff. Thank God they shut him down. It's a bit like when you kind of go, oh, yeah, thank God that guy died or that band broke up. I can now catch up with
yeah,
all their
output.
Yeah,
or when a TV show gets cancelled now. Yeah. And finally watch all of the episodes.
Yeah, because I know when it's going to end. Yeah.
So, yeah, you're now on 30 out of 63, which is approaching 47%.
Good
it's
God.
46.7, I think. So, yeah. Congratulations.
Cool.
So it's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called Grifting is Not a Logical Fallacy, because, I mean, that's what Trump's been doing for whole life.
He kind of went, oh, yeah, he's doing that. Yeah.
But, yeah, it came out recently. New York Times did a report on the campaign contributions that people had been donating to the Trump campaign before the 2020 election.
Yeah.
And the ways in which the RNC and the Trump campaign were bilking the donors out of more money than they expected to donate.
Yeah.
And it is fucking amazing.
The article starts with like one guy who's going to go, okay, yeah, I'll chip in. You know, it's a bit like when occasionally you get, I did one the other day of ancient trees being chopped down in a neighbourhood I used to live in, and will you chip in, you know, £2 to so that we can campaign for it and afford a lawyer and blah, 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 blah. So that's kind of what people have done. They chipped in and then only to find that they didn't just chip in once. What's happened is something's been taken out every month or every week. And they failed to uncheck a box that's further down the page, the donation page, said, oh, yeah, and we'll also take an extra one-off payment. So,
yeah.
What the fuck? So this guy who thought he was just going to kind of chip in $500, you know, he's battling cancer, he's running out of money, he's on less than $1,000 a month, he was putting in $500, and then by the end of it, it's like, $3,000 have gone in less than a month. And went, oh, no, well, yeah, that's because you failed to uncheck these boxes.
Yeah.
And it's not like they didn't know they were doing it because the scale of the refunds.
Well, the thing is, it's not like they didn't know they were doing it because they continually made it harder to notice that it was happening.
Yeah, that they were doing it, yeah, by adding so, longer and longer bits of text.
So in March of 2020, they added a box to their donation platform. This was on WinRed, which is the Republican version of ActBlue, although it's not really because it's a for-profit organisation, whereas ActBlue is not for profit. So it's a way of getting campaign donations to Republicans, but they also take a cut.
And making money off the process.
So in March of 2020, they added a box that says, make this a monthly recurring donation. It's a kind of bright yellow box. It's in bold, but the box is pre-checked. Yeah. So you have to actively
opt out
of whatever donation you're giving them, that going out every month. But that was the first bit. And at that point, the all campaigns refund donations if people basically ask for their money back for a reasonable reason, at least. And the amount that was being refunded by both campaigns was roughly the same. It was in the area of about 2% of all of their donations were getting refunded to people who had donated in error or too much or... You know,
because there's that individual limit of $2,000.
Yeah, there's $2,800. That's another thing. The legal limit is $2,800 per person. So there's also refunds because of that.
Yeah.
If people donate more, you have to give it back. So that it's goes down to that level. So all campaigns have a refund, and before that point, the Trump campaign and the Biden campaign were roughly on the same level, but. Some bright spark in the Trump campaign came up with an idea that because it was Trump's birthday on the 14th of June 2020, what they would do is add another box that said, let's make a fundraising record on President Trump's birthday. It said, join now And then in non-bold text underneath, it said, this additional donation will process on June 14th. And again, that was pre-checked. And what that did was basically double your donation. So you donated your $100 or whatever, and then on Trump's birthday, you donated another $100 automatically.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
The day after Trump's birthday, the refunds went up from 2.2% over the next couple of months to 12%. 12.29%.
Wow.
Because people hadn't noticed that.
Yeah.
And so when another donation that they'd agreed to, and the first one going out, went out of their account, some people noticed and went, hang on a minute, that I didn't intend that to happen. And that's the people who hadn't accidentally been doing it every month.
Yeah. Because they'd unchecked the first box and then not the second one. Whoa.
But they didn't stop there. Because that was so successful, and Trump's birthday, all of the donations that were processed on that day, they did break the record for Trump's campaign. It was the most successful day they had, essentially, of processing, although they gave about 10% of those donations back. then, in September, when once they realised that Biden was outraising them... he'd outraised...
More money, right.
Yeah, he'd outraised them in August by over $150 million.
Wow.
They changed their box to say, make this a weekly recurring donation until the 3rd of November. And this is in September.
Wow, in September. Wow.
So if you're donating, let's say $100, some people were doing more than that.
Yeah.
But if you're donating $100 at the beginning of September, then you're donating every week through September, October to the beginning of November. That's going to be like $900,000 when you only intended to do it once.
Do it once. Wow.
And they also added another, what they call a money bomb box, which was the originally the birthday one, saying, I debate Joe Biden on September 29th and I need to know that I have your support. Join the Trump cash blitz now. That box was the one that basically added another donation of however much you were donating on September 29th. The debate day, which you don't need extra campaign funds for.
No.
So potentially people were donating, like in 30 days, they were donating six times because they had their initial one, the extra money bomb donation, and four and further weekly donations.
Jesus.
I mean, and there, again, in the article, it talks about a 72-year-old whose wife donated $1,000 in early October, which by election day, she had donated $6,000.
Yeah, and then they got $5,000
back. They got the stuff they weren't intending to donate back, and that is something that has to happen. But not everyone will have bothered to, first of all, check what's going on with their bank account necessarily, or actually followed it up and got that money back. A lot of people probably will have noticed it's gone out and thought, oh, bugger, I should change that. Yeah. I'll cancel that. A lot of people cancelled their credit cards or got in touch with their banks and said, I don't want any more payments going out.
Yeah.
And a lot of them had overdrafts because of this
that they had to
pay fees on. They will not necessarily have had all that money back.
Wow. And the reason he was doing this was because he was running out of funds or...
Yeah, because he wasn't getting enough donations, enough people donating initially compared to Biden.
So in effect, he's getting a free loan, really, isn't he? Because
Absolutely.
He's kind of got this money for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, or until people say, wait a minute, and then they give it back. So they can give it back out of what they've got, which means they've got to where they've got. For 6 weeks, they've had all this cash that they didn't have before to do something, and then they can just like give it back for a lower percentage.
Yeah.
So even if 12% of the, it goes up from 2% to 12%, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they had to give back $122 million of donations.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the thing is, this process took a lot of people over, like that woman who donated $6,000.
Yeah.
Even if she hadn't requested her money back, she's only allowed to donate to $2,800. Mm. So they would have had to refund that anyway.
And
that
anyway.
Happened to loads of people who ended up.
Yeah.
One person ended up getting a refund of $87,000.
Jesus Christ!
Three weeks after the election, because she donated so much more than you're legally allowed to donate because of this system.
Wow. So they're just doing it knowing that it's going to bring in money that they will have to give back.
Yeah, but they won't have to give it back for a while. And they can continue, like a Ponzi scheme, they can keep taking donations, especially since he was continually taking donations after the election so that he could contest the election.
Yeah.
And a lot of that money that he raised after the election would have been used to pay back the
people
money.
Who were claiming back. Absolutely. Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's like a Ponzi scheme, basically.
So it's just like a bridging loan, isn't it? So it's just going, oh, well, and the thing is, they're the people that support him. They're his kind of dearest allies and supporters. And they're the people that can least afford it. The people that he weaponized, you know, the blue collar workers who recognize him as one of their own. The guy on the gold toilet in the penthouse suite in New York. You know, on 42nd Street or whatever it is, just go, oh, yeah, he's one of you, and now he's fleecing you blind.
Absolutely. And the thing is, most of the people that the New York Times got in touch with about this, who had got into financial trouble because of it, most of them didn't blame Trump at all.
No.
They just blamed WinRed and said they're you know, scam artists and it's scandalous and they're not, you know, donating through WinRed again. But none of them had anything bad to say about Trump.
No, because they're kind of going, no, because they've just bought the propaganda. Jesus Christ, the dumb fucks. Jesus. But there's, you know, millions of them.
Yeah. But it got to the point by the election where there were 9 lines of bold text before it said, not in bold, make this a weekly recurring donation.
Yeah.
So it said that this is one of the last ones. It said, this is the final month until election day. And various of these words are capitalized.
Yeah.
And we need every patriot stepping up if we're going to win 4 more years for President Trump. He's revitalizing our economy, restoring law and order, and returning us to American greatness. But he's not done yet. This is your chance. Stand with President Trump and maximize your impact now. And then it says, in smaller writing that isn't bold, make this a weekly recurring donation until election day. And again, these are all pre-checked boxes that if you just see that, you think, oh, fuck, I'm not, you know, I can't. But
can't
I mean,
be bothered to read down there.
Especially Trump voters.
Yeah.
How many of them can be bothered to read that amount of text?
Quite. That's just that cynical manipulation of the non-computer literate, non-reading Trump voter. It's just the most cynical exploitation of his own constituents.
Yeah.
God, it's awful, isn't it? Jeez, there's going to have to be an extra level of hell in Dante's hell, you know, that is one below Judas Iscariot to have Trump. And then below Trump, there will all be his supporters going, well, this isn't fair. He shouldn't be down here.
Yeah.
You know, let's campaign to get him out, get him to the good place. Jesus Christ.
And the thing is, because although this wasn't entirely thought up by WinRed, it was part of a kind of a decision. In fact, no one is taking credit for this.
No.
But it seems like it was an agreement between Trump's digital director, Gary Kobe, and WinRed. But WinRed are now kind of rolling it out to other Republican campaigns.
Right. So it hasn't been...
It's not stopped. No, Kevin McCarthy's website until recently still had the box pre-checked for this. I checked today and it's actually now you have to specifically choose to make it a recurring donation.
Right.
No, I tell a lie. Mitch McConnell's, what? You have to choose. Kevin McCarthy's, it is still pre-checked.
Still pre-checked.
Yeah, so the House House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, his campaign website is still, and I'm sure many other Republicans, their campaign websites still have the pre-checked yellow box. Yeah, Mitch is one who did have it pre-checked until this week, and it's now you have to check the box. This is an ongoing grifting scenario where the Republicans are bilking their supporters out of money that many of them cannot afford.
No. Well, that's your typical Republican voter is the working man, you know, who can barely afford, who is like one or two wage packets away from destitution. And that's what the Republicans stand for, is representing the working man and having his interests apart. That's all their rhetoric.
Yeah.
You know, it's far from the truth, because the Republican, you know, members of the GOP, the most high earning people, they are the 1%.
Yeah.
You know, they are the swamp. It's not like they're starving to death. They are milking the fat of the land by just preying on people's patriotism.
Yeah. And it should be said, there are occasionally Democrat campaigns that include a pre-checked box.
Yeah.
But from what the New York Times has been able to ascertain, at least, they are typically on pages where the whole page is about, if you want to become a recurring donor, donate here, and then the box is pre-checked. And as a result, there aren't the refunds at the same level. I mean, in the last 2.5 months of 2020, the Biden campaign made 37,000 online refunds, totaling $5.6 million, which sounds like quite a lot.
Yeah.
Until you hear that the Trump campaign, during the same time period, issued more than 530,000 refunds, totaling $64.3 million.
Wow!
Just in the last two and a half months of 2020.
Wow. And they're giving back that much, you know, which is kind of half of what the Biden campaign was beating them on. And you think, whoa, it's just out and out. But the thing is, who of the Republican voters and Trump supporters are reading the New York Times?
Yeah.
Well, they've been warned off it because it's fake news.
Absolutely.
That stuff, you know, they report the truth about what's really happening with Trump's campaign to fleece the very people that support him. And he's saying, no, don't go read that stuff because it's fake. It's fake news. Yeah. They are the metropolitan liberal elite. Just avoid, don't read that, because that'll tell you what I'm up to.
Yeah.
And
the independents who don't read it can continue to claim that Biden is just like Trump.
Yeah, because they'll go, oh, yeah, well, look, they're making returns. So, yes, it's not how many you make. It's the reasons for making the returns.
Well, it is how many you make as well.
And how many you make. Yeah. God damn it. I so want him to not have any more money coming in, but there will be.
Oh, yeah. As soon as he announces his 2024 run, it all starts again.
All happens again. Oh, for God's sake. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
I'm very upset this week because our favourite indicted incompetent fraudster, Jacob Wohl, claimed that he had some inside information on the whole Matt Gaetz situation. But unbelievably, he's been unable to follow through with actual information. Meanwhile, Gaetz, who looks like Beavis got frozen in carbonite, has had a bit of a bad week. His wingman, Joel Greenberg, who's facing charges of sex trafficking, bribery and fraud, is now cooperating with authorities, which probably isn't great for Gaetz, who, incidentally, would be a lock to play the big giant head in the inevitable Third Rock from the Sun reboot. It's also been revealed that the FBI seized Gaetz's iPhone during the winter, but they needn't have bothered since neither Gaetz nor Greenberg took the time to check the box that makes their Venmo accounts private, which means everyone could see the payments from Gaetz to Greenberg and the subsequent payments of suspiciously similar value from Greenberg to various young women with subject lines like tuition, school, stuff, and other stuff. I mean, stuff is bad enough, but I think other stuff can get you some serious prison time.
Yeah, that is jailbait right there, isn't it? for fans of Fox News, there's now even more Greg Gutfeld available in his new Fox TV show, simply entitled Gutfeld. Yes, with an exclamation mark, like it's a failed turn of the 90s Broadway musical about getting to grips with morbid obesity. The show's logo is orange and in jokey typeface, which makes it look exactly like the Garfield logo. And allegedly, it's a late-night comedy show, although the logo is the funniest thing about it. And even that doesn't work because Gutfeld doesn't sound at all like Garfield. Only last week, Jim and I were saying yet again that the right simply can't do jokes, don't get humour because they take everything that's said in jest or otherwise as a personal affront to their rights and a diminishing of them as human beings, and they get very serious and angry about it. So in an attempt to show that the right do funny, this show. And of course it fails because it isn't funny, and yep, they can't do funny. Look, Greg, just because you're making several joke-shaped statements in a row, in the place, in a show where the other late-night show hosts who actually are actual comedians do it, alternating with right-wing lectures about how everything's awful and they're coming to get you and curb your freedoms, they won't actually interest the folks at Montrose Rose-based award department one bit. Horrifyingly, of course, the ratings will justify the expense of the airtime because none of that matters to an audience bereft of Trump's aged uncle phoning into Fox News for hours at a time act, who are in dire need of a string of mindless, spittle-flecked diatribes. Consequently, it will run and run, but please don't tune in if you're after something funny. Better to sit and watch the microwave with the door open again. Oh, hey, yeah, pretty much like Greg's audience.
Yeah, but if you're into cringe comedy...
then, where then, better to go?
It's worth a look, because fucking hell.
It's just, it is, they're kind of going, well, we'll just do things that are the same shape and in the same order and same location as what the other guys are doing. Glossing over the fact that the other guys have a history of stand-up and comedy writing and being funny, and then they think, well, because they don't do humour, they think that's humorous. And you look at it and you think, well, if this was Sacha Baron Cohen, perhaps he'll tear off his rubber face and go, it was Sacha.
But, I mean, to give an example, they've got this recurring skit where they cut to what CNN is showing now. Right. And it's always 2 to 3 pundits calling each other racists.
Right.
And they keep doing it every day.
Yeah.
But that's all it is. It wasn't funny the first time. It hasn't been funny any subsequent time. And they don't even, when they cut to CNN, put a CNN graphic on. They still use the Fox News fucking chyron. Because they are so incompetent, they can't copy CNN. It's amazing.
That would be the first thing we do. As video makers, that would be the first thing we do.
Make it look like it's the channel you're claiming it is.
Yeah, make it an output.
Honestly. Yeah.
Okay, we need that up there.
And the exclamation mark just makes me think of Freud from Friends.
Yeah. Exactly that. Yeah.
Why? Phoebe going, it's not just Freud, it's Freud.
Yeah. No,
so,
awful.
Oh, boy.
Don't go here. Don't look at it.
Desperate to convince Trump that he's still relevant, a National Republican Senatorial Committee made up an award just so they could give it to him. Committee chairman and bad guy from The Hills Have Eyes, Rick Scott, headed to Mar-a-Lago, presumably figuring out which green Trump was on, and handed him a small silver bowl, which he told him was the inaugural Champion for Freedom Award. The bullshit trinket, which I'm willing to bet will also be the last Champion for Freedom award the committee can ever be bothered to award, probably made Trump feel good for a couple of minutes before he remembered that he's just a sad, lonely, bitter old man who nobody likes and chucked the bowl in a cupboard alongside his Bay of Pigs award and the trophy he got for being Michigan Man of the Year.
Oh, and that, wasn't there like...
The Time
Trump
magazine
City,
cover and...
The Trump City that where they kind of went, oh yeah, we're going to name this entire... building development.
Oh, the one in Israel, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Ivanka Trump, yeah, remember her? She was a big fan of POTUS 45, apparently. Remember him? Her dad? well, it opened doors for her at the time. Anyway, she apparently has been executed by Trump. Well, because that's what she told a QAnon in her secret message, dressed up as a picture on Twitter of her being injected by a nurse. Of course, she didn't mention a vaccine at all. Oh, no. She said she got the shot, which is, of course, deep state speak for being terminated. So, several questions occur to normal human beings, like, how can you interpret a picture of someone at a hospital with a nurse putting something in her arm, not as getting a shot of vaccine? And if she had been executed, how would she post the tweet? And why are QAnoners maintaining that the QR code that appears in one of the photos she posted on Twitter returns a number that, when plugged into the DuckDuckGo search engine, returns the web address for the 8kun board that QAnon's anonymous leader used to post updates on when it doesn't? Well, we all know why. It's because they're fucking insane anti-vaxxers and confused about how to feel now that both Donald and daughter have backed the vaccine and only gone and bloody getting put in their arm. Bill Gates, George Soros, rant, fume, etc., etc. No need to worry, though, because our saviour, Lynn Wood, who's currently seeking a GOP leadership role in South Carolina, will fight whatever needs fighting when the storm arrives with his religious approach to his disinformation. When he says, I will not take the CCP flu vaccine because from a spiritual point of view, I trust God's promise of protection. Well, good luck, Lynn, because the Almighty has his work cut out in South Carolina with his average of 2,000 new cases a day for the last 3 months. Do your research, you sheeple.
According to documents obtained by Punch Bowl News, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who looks exactly like Sidney Powell cosplaying as Dog the Bounty Hunter, has teamed up with body language expert Congressman Paul Gosar to form an America First caucus, whose mission statement contains enough racist dog whistles to summon all the racist dogs in America. Actually, they're just racist regular whistles, because fuck being subtle about it, they decided. In the immigration section, they describe America as a nation with a border and a culture strengthened by a common respect for uniquely Anglo-Saxon political traditions.
Wow.
And the infrastructure section claims they will work towards an infrastructure that reflects the architectural, engineering and aesthetic value that befits the progeny of European architecture.
Whoa.
Whatever the fuck that means.
Wow. That's Albert Speer architecture.
MTG spokesman confirmed on Friday that the caucus would be launching very soon, and then less than 24 hours later emailed CNN to say that the congresswoman had no plans to launch anything. I wonder what changed.
Touche Turtle, being voiced by Dum Dum himself, Mitch McConnell.
Two very up-to-date references there.
has torn up centuries of belief in the old maxim that he who pays the piper calls the tune, in a response to uppity major Georgia-based corporations who are questioning the wisdom slash human rights violation of Georgia's new restrictive voting law. My advice to the corporate CEOs of America is to stay out of politics. Don't pick sides in these big fights, McConnell said at a news conference on Monday. On Tuesday, having been reminded by the entire internet of his status as long-time recipient of corporate donations, and indeed outstripping most other members of Congress by some measures when it came to political donations, of course said, no, I didn't mean in terms of donations. Still give us all your money, just don't ever get involved in commenting on what we're doing, because that's incendiary, and I quote, I just think it's stupid. Well, there's the integrity of the GOP demonstrated right there. Give all the money you like, but don't expect that it will mean you wield any influence at all on the decisions made by the politicians you're supporting. Actually sounds quite good and noble and honest. Not what he meant, of course. And it will ultimately mean simply that the GOP will get less funding. Yeah, way to go, Mitch. Call your donors stupid. If you had any viable dentition, I'd warn you not to bite the hands that feeds you. But I fear being incendiary that close to your dripping house of wax face.
Pillow magnate and fat Ron Burgundy Mike Lindell is launching his new free speech-based social network today. After the threat of legal action forced him to drop the name Vocal, he plumped for Frank Speech instead, which sounds like the kindest possible review of a Trump rally. Lindell has promised that people will have 10 times more followers on Frank, sensibly neglecting to say which platform he's comparing that to. But the big news this week is that the speech might be a bit less free than advertised. In fact, posts will be censored significantly more than pretty much any other social network, since, as Lindell claims, you don't get to use the four swear words, the C word, the N word, the F word, or God's name in vain. Oh, Mike, you sweet innocent child. Boy, have you underestimated people's creative ability to swear and blaspheme. Mike claims they will have a very clear explanation on the site of all the things you won't be allowed to say, and I'm going to have a lot of fun getting banned for saying stuff that isn't on the list.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone can do really creative swearing, it's the British. Yeah, you cockwomble, for instance, you know, we would just put that out there. Nobody on that site is going to understand what it means, but it sounds rude. In Britpol, it's been another action-packed week for the crony party, sorry, Tory party, desperate for the news cycle to move on. There are now 8 separate inquiries appertaining to Tory party activities as spearheaded by ex-Prime Minister, Brexit fuckwit, face like a condom filled with pink monge, David Cameron, over the supporting / giving preferential treatment to / funding / lobbying for and generally diverting public funds to support failed financial services company Greensill Capital. 8, count them, 8 inquiries. And then we find that Health Secretary Matt Hancock himself has a large and heretofore undeclared shareholder interest in a health company that received a huge government health contract. In years gone by the mere intimation that dodgy dealings were afoot, ministers would have done the decent thing and resigned their posts, if not actually slide the revolver across the dining table and asked to be left alone in the drawing room. Now, yeah, not so much. The lovely word sleaze, used to describe what parties were tinged with or mired in, not actually constructed out of in steaming great lumps, has suddenly appeared again in the press. But of course, with a thumping majority and therefore absolute power, if you're going to do corruption, you might as well do it absolutely.
I am livid that you think that you can do a week in Britpol without discussing the Cuthbert the Caterpillar scandal.
Oh, yeah. Is that part, well, I guess it's the politics of consumerism.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And isn't it? Well, I think the problem is that it's Clive. Is it not Clive in Marks & Spencer?
It's Colin. Colin Cuthbert. The Caterpillar in Marks & Spencer's. Cuthbert in Aldi. But but every other supermarket has got a version, and M&S just suddenly decided to sue Aldi on the basis that Cuthbert looks a little bit too much like Colin.
Yeah, and also it alliterates, whereas the other ones that don't like
Herbert. There's one of them's got Curly. And
oh, is it?
Yeah, there's every single supermarket has a version, and it's like M&S have just suddenly gone, oh, are other people doing this thing that we've been doing for 30 years? And don't we have some kind of legal claim on that?
Yeah, and someone reverse engineered our cake by kind of like taking a mold.
Someone has made a Swiss roll and stuck a caterpillar face on it.
Face on it, like you would, yeah, and some feet, yeah, and some M&Ms along the spine.
It's been the talk of the UK this week.
I know.
So, anyway.
Yeah, but it's been a government policy to kind of divert people away from 8 inquiries into the dodgy funding of a failing capital system. Yeah.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our straw man level patrons Kaz Tui, Mark Reiki, and Amber R. Buchanan. Thank you very much, everyone. We really do appreciate your support.
And thank you especially to Kaz Tui this week for leaving a comment on our Patreon, having listened to all of our ranting about
all
Wonder
8
Woman
hours.
Wonder Woman 1984. So if you want to hear there's patreon.com/ftrump. Thanks, Kaz, and thanks to anyone else who's actually bothered to listen to it. To be honest, we kind of just did it for us anyway, but
But it's much better than the movie.
Absolutely.
You know, even though it's 4 times longer.
And you can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So till next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right, go home to mommy. Bye. Bye!
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.